dawn on the desert. As day breaks, a small clan of people walk silently by yucca plants and cacti. They head for a special place in the desert, a cattle guard. Now, you may not think a cattle guard to be that important, but this cattle guard, like a line drawn in the sand, marks the boundary of the Nevada nuclear test site. In the fall of 1988, for a few days, I was among those who met daily at that crossing. We stood there smiling and waving to the people driving by as the work shifts in Mercury, Nevada were changing. We came because of many different reasons. We gathered at that gate with only one purpose: to stand as a witness to all those who passed that not in our names was the testing of nuclear weapons going to continue. In this session, we will examine the ideas of a faith-based witnessing in the context of resistance to nuclear weapons testing and in the context of Mormon culture. We have gathered together an illustrious panel, I do say so myself, and I'd like to briefly introduce them and then turn the time over to them for their prepared messages. Our first speaker this afternoon will be Bonnie Danowski, who is a member of the National Board of the Nevada Desert Experience. She works as an organizer at the Franciscan Renewal Center in Arizona. Our next speaker would have been Claudia Peterson, but she was unable to attend due to family matters. But she will be seen in a film called Bound by the Wind, which we will be showing, or video that we will be showing during the lunch break in the room next door. After Bonnie speaks, we will have a presentation by a group of students from BYU. The first will be Greg Hinckley, and the second will be Melanie Standard, and along with a small narrative part by Larry Young. After their presentation, we will hear from Diana Lee Hershey, who is a Quaker and a peace activist who has a long history in witnessing at the Nevada nuclear test site. And our final concluding speaker will be Larry Young, who's a professor of sociology. And after that, if there are any questions in the time that's remaining that's available, we'll seek to answer those questions. Bonnie?
Good morning, everyone. In the desert, 65 miles northwest of Las Vegas, Nevada, and in the heart of Western Shoshone Nation land, exists a force of incredible strength and proportion. It's the Nevada Nuclear Weapons Test Site. This morning, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about nuclear weapons testing, what happens specifically at the Nevada test site, and then to share with you what it means to be a part of a faith-based witness, the Nevada Desert Experience. But first, may I tell you a little bit more about myself so that you sort of know where I'm coming from. I've been married for almost 28 years to my husband, Jim. We have two sons who, one is a senior in psychology at Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona, and the other just graduated from ASU with a Master of Fine Arts degree. I do work as an organizer, and I organize people at the Franciscan Renewal Center around service, around advocacy, around education, around empowerment, around changing things in the community, social injustices. So actually, my first exposure to the Nevada Desert Experience and the Nevada test site was because of my work. That was 7 years ago. The first nuclear bomb was exploded in the atmosphere on July 16, 1945, at Alamogordo, New Mexico. Called Trinity, it was followed shortly thereafter by the bombing of Hiroshima on August 6th and Nagasaki on August 9th. We are in that 47th year this weekend. For the next 16 years, the United States tested in the Pacific south of Hawaii and over the South Atlantic Ocean. All atmospheric or above-ground testing was stopped in 1962. Since then, the testing has been done underground in tunnels or shafts. other underground testing in the United States since 1962 have been done in Colorado, Mississippi, New Mexico, and an Aleutian island off of Alaska. I didn't know anything about this 7 years ago, so it was really a shock to me that we were doing that much testing. The only nuclear weapons testing now that is done by the United States is done at the Nevada test site. The more destruction, the mass destruction that nuclear weapons can cause is terrifying. I took a tour of the test site about 3 years ago, and as the bus went through Frenchman Flat, which was where the above-ground testing was done, we were shown a railroad trestle that was bent as if it had been made of Play-Doh instead of corrugated heavy steel. Looking around and seeing that was really frightening, but seeing that there was no vegetation growing there was even more scary. The only thing I think more horrifying to me was actually seeing the shafts that go into the tunnels that go into the mesas where the testing is done now, and the underground shafts which create craters when they are exploded. As we went through the into the tunnels in little carts that were like amusement park cars, you know, you get on a little track and go in, I wondered what had happened. Had we made the scientific specificity of nuclear weapons testing an idol? Was that what was important, and have we actually forgotten what mass destruction a nuclear weapon can do? It was like playing Disneyland for real. It was the feeling I got. It was just really an unreal feeling. But on with the history. On January 27, 1951, the Department of Energy exploded its first nuclear weapon at the Nevada test site. The first tests were above ground, as I said, and we see film of the military and scientific personnel participating in that, and the VIPs watching from stands off in the distance. As the mushroom cloud formed when the weapon was detonated, not everything was known about the danger that was happening there. How it looked like snow as it fell on the people was actually radioactive particles and caused many of the people cancer or death. We also didn't really think about the damage that was being done to the environment, to the earth itself at ground zero, and then as that vibrated outwards. Congress since has legislated compensation for those atomic veterans, the military observers, and the downwinders, or the people who lived downwind, and when the particles were carried by the atmosphere, fell on them. The Nevada test site is located in Nye County and covers 1,350 square miles. That's 100 square miles larger than the state of Rhode Island, and it employs 8,000 people. It's the site where the United States and Great Britain do their testing. A little history on how many explosions have been created in our world. From 1945 to the end of 1991, there were 1,921 nuclear weapons explosions. The U.S. accounts for 937 at a cost of $6 to $60 million each. That's 48.8% of all worldwide testing. The USSR, with 714 tests, accounted for 37%. The remaining 14.2% were done by France, Great Britain, China, and India. In 1991, the U.S. conducted 8 tests, France 6, and China 1. 4 tests have been conducted at the Nevada test site this year. Meanwhile, on October 5, 1991, Mikhail Gorbachev imposed a year moratorium, unilateral moratorium, on testing in the Soviet Union. Boris Yeltsin then followed suit on October 26 and declared a one-year moratorium in Russia. On April 8th of this year, France set a moratorium on nuclear weapons testing until the end of 1992, with the condition that if other countries followed suit, they would extend that moratorium. And now let me talk to you a little bit about the Nevada Desert Experience. That's where my heart is. In 1982, the 800th anniversary of the birth of St. Francis of Assisi, a small group of Franciscans and people devoted to the teachings of Francis extended a national invitation to others to come to the desert. With the manufacture of the neutron bomb in the 70s and coming out of a tradition of peace, The Franciscans in the Las Vegas area had been praying and discerning with each other and with others who didn't agree with them about how they were called to be peacemakers. As the dialogue deepened, one thing was clear. And each time, as more faith traditions come together, it is clarified even further. And that is that NDE is first and foremost a faith-based organization that says no to war and yes to peace. Connections continue to be made between nuclear weapons testing and poverty, education, health care, housing, the environment. With the environment, for instance, the concern is around the ventings which often occur during testing, the damage to the earth from the testing, and there's the issue of the storage of nuclear waste. There are just too many questions that go unanswered. The clarification of our mission comes from various experiences and conversations and actions with other people of faith. Actions which have focused more earnestly in the last couple of years on working on a comprehensive test ban treaty, which, as most of you know, would call for the cessation of nuclear weapons testing worldwide. I first became involved with the Nevada Desert Experience in January of 1985. A friend and colleague of mine, a young Franciscan priest, and I journeyed to Las Vegas from Phoenix for a conference held at St. James Church, and then on Saturday morning traveled to the test site to vigil. There are also people who felt called, did civil resistance or civil disobedience, nonviolent direct action, whatever the name for it that you have for it, they were arrested by going across the line. As we stood that morning along the road at the test site entrance and prayed and held signs that said, "Peace be with you," or "Stop the testing," "Peace through disarmament," we waved to the test site workers as the buses lumbered through the gate. We also waved to the trucks that were coming through and bringing materials into the test site to help with the work there. I'll never forget that weekend, because as I got on the plane late Saturday night to come back to Phoenix, a man in his late 20s sat next to me, being really tired and feeling kind of like I had to nurture the introvert within me. I put my glasses on and took out a book and started to read. It didn't seem to divert him at all, because he began talking with me, and I just said, "I'm really just feeling really tired." He wasn't going to let that rest either. So he said, "Well, what were you in Vegas at the casinos and doing the shows and that kind of thing?" And I said, "Well, no." I don't want to get into a discussion with this guy, but I said, "No, I went to the test site to pray and to vigil." And he looked at me and he said, "I know, I saw you this morning." He had taken a load into the site that morning. He and his brother had inherited a mine near Tucson, Arizona. And the mineral in that mine was a very rare mineral, and it was used to insulate some of the equipment or some of the waste. I don't remember anymore exactly what it was, but it was used at the test site. As we talked about it, we kind of explored the possibility of what it would mean if we didn't have to use that material for things that made war rather than things that made peace. And we talked about what could happen in the medical community or the industrial community. And we had a really, needless to say, interesting dialogue. As I deplaned when we got to Phoenix, he was going on to Tucson, and I stood up and he offered his hand to me and he said, "My name's Tom, and I hope your side wins." I learned a lot from that, just that I've become very aware that not only of the variety of individuals concerned about the arms buildup, but also of the many faiths these individuals represent. Though formed out of the Catholic tradition, specifically the Franciscans, the willingness and indeed the active inclusiveness of the Nevada Desert Experience of people of many faiths has given expression to what happens through NDE. I point to the Western Shoshone Nation and its rich spirituality as we often begin rituals through the Shoshone holy people. They've also worked with our board and our staff in helping us to formulate our mission. To the Buddhist monks who have led worship, especially during our August Desert Witness, this weekend the retreat is being given out of the tradition of Buddhism and Christianity. To the friends as they teach us about peace, to the Lutherans, the Methodists, the Baptists, the Episcopalians, the Catholics, the UCCs, the Jews, and just recently of the small group of Mormons who joined us last Lent. To the Mennonites, to all who believe in a God of peace and believe in our responsibility to bring the message of peace and justice to our world, we need you to join us. We invite you to help to shape our mission with us. Initially, after that first visit to the Nevada test site, I prayed and reflected upon how the events that had occurred there fit into my faith system. It was very hard to understand how this country with its religious beginnings could do so much damage to our earth and then to the residents of the area, especially the downwinders, and to the workers of the test site. Dom Helder Camara, a Catholic bishop from Central South America, has commented that the test site is a place of great evil and potential great good. I have found it so. To look into the Sedan crater, the result of the Atomic Energy Commission's Plowshare Program's underground test of July 6, 1962, you see great damage to the earth. This basin was formed by the detonation of a 100-kiloton explosive, equivalent to 100,000 tons of TNT, buried 635 feet below the surface of the earth. The explosion displaced 12 million tons of earth, leaving a crater 320 feet deep and 1,280 feet in diameter. The test site is covered with these craters. So when you look down from an aerial view, it's full of pock marks. And that's what they look like, are pocks. I question what's happening to the earth beneath. As the explosion goes off and it melts down and then contracts again as it cools. As to the many people of the area, many of them were never informed as to the dangers to them, to their futures, and to their children. And then it was only after tremendous pressure and after the fact that any information was given to them, and eventually some compensation has been considered for them. And finally, the effects of the possible successful delivery of from 25,000 to 50,000 nuclear warheads to various targets throughout the world. It's been frightening us for years. And as we disarm, it's going to frighten us for more to come. It's insanity. So through NDE, we have two fronts that we work on for peace. One at the Nevada test site itself, and then at home when we return to our communities to work for a comprehensive test ban treaty, which would lead to disarmament. The trip to the desert each year for our folks from the Phoenix area has been an annual one. Some of us have gone 11, 12 times, and we'll go again next year. The test site provides a place where we can all come together to connect things in our lives, our own spirituality, and how that is part of our lives within our families, our friends, the workplace, and the work that we do to correct injustices and bring about peace. It seems as if that short weekend in the desert, even though we too come from the desert, brings us face to face with what is really important and what isn't. It's a grace-filled place in which you just brought up just dead against the elements. The Nevada Desert Experience also prescribes to a covenant of nonviolence, which permeates all of our actions and our work, and I think makes our work authentic. By nonviolence, I don't mean passive. I mean more the nonviolence that Gandhi talked about, the satyagraha, the truth force. It's a creative, strategic, positive, active force which does not use violence and which helps change a social injustice. It's being connected to God through all that is available to us and loving others through that and above all else. We at NDE have been criticized widely over the years, sometimes for bringing faith into politics, sometimes for not being political enough, and we've criticized ourselves too for not being good enough at what we do. And sometimes not being good enough in the relationships that we develop. The dialogue goes on. We know one thing, and I'd like to quote Mike Affleck, who is a fellow board member here. He says, "We are people of faith who encourage other people of faith to pray with us in the desert, to protest the testing of nuclear weapons, to pray for peace. It is what we know how to do, so we do it." Now let me bring you up to date on what's happening with the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, and with how NDE is responding to that. A year ago, when the NDE board came together for our semi-annual meeting, as we talked about what we saw as the mission of NDE, we focused again on the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty as a first step to disarmament. The Non-Proliferation Treaty is coming up for renewal or termination in the year 1995. That's also the 50th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It is the most important date that we've had for a long time. This treaty from 1968 is the cornerstone of the international non-proliferation regime, obligating non-nuclear weapon states not to manufacture or acquire nuclear weapons, implicitly prohibiting testing by those states, and requiring all parties to pursue negotiations on arms control and disarmament. The preamble refers explicitly to the comprehensive test ban, which many non-nuclear weapon states regard as the key criterion for judging the nuclear weapon state's compliance with the treaty. If we don't have a comprehensive test ban treaty by 1995, 20 other countries may become nuclear powers. They are that close. With the end of the Cold War, we saw that the work that must be done through Congress as the most important work. At that time, we committed to hiring a full-time organizer to organize the regions. That's being done, and to work in the areas where we can most affect change. This past week, the Senate voted for a 9-month moratorium on nuclear testing. At this point, the bill must go through the Senate Defense Authorization Bill, and that process leaves open the possibility of some changes, some modification to the bill. So we're asking people to take action, to keep in touch with your senators. If your senators supported it, reaffirm them on that. If they did not support them, ask them to support it. After it leaves that group, it will go back to the House of Representatives to develop a compromise bill. They're thinking that the earliest time it will go to the president for his signature will be late September or early October. That's right. That's right. They need to be told why they need to. You're awfully close. Neighbors to Nevada. We have one that did and one that didn't. At this most critical time, when for the first time in 40 years, nuclear weapons testing can come to a halt, I would argue that people would much rather see the $2 billion requested by the Department of Energy for testing in 1993, and it's in a tentative 94 budget as well, be used to correct some of the problems in our country. I'm not talking about handouts. I'm talking about rejuvenating the 70,000 jobs that have been lost in the last 10 years in South Central Los Angeles. We saw what happened because of that. In helping the 1 in 5 children who live in poverty in our country, providing medical care to the 33 million who do not have insurance, and that doesn't count to people who have inadequate medical coverage. Correcting the education system so it doesn't lose our kids. In Phoenix, in one of the South high schools, 50% of the kids who start in 9th grade drop out before they graduate. We need to develop a job training program that prepares people not for low-value-added, low-wage jobs, but for high-skill, high-wage jobs. It can be done. We need to rebuild a declining culture, to rebuild a culture where the dignity of the person is recognized and held up as the measuring stick of our society. This requires us to become educated, to organize, to be accountable. The time for the activist who merely walked in with a Bible in his hand or her hand is over. We must now walk into the public arena with a Bible in one hand and a newspaper in the other. Please call your senators. I have the number, if you'd like to write it down, of the Capitol switchboard. It's 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. Through the past 11 years, the people who make up the Nevada Desert Experience have prayed, have laughed, cried, dialogued, planned, negotiated, been arrested, organized to bring an end to weapons and the beginning of the world to a world of peace. I'd like to close by inviting you to join us. We need you. We need diversity. We know that in diversity is strength. We need your spirituality, your values, your connections into the power system, your connections into our politicians. And now, we'd like to close with a quote from Jean-Michel Cousteau. Treaties are our first step, but let us hope we will all see the day when pens molded from discarded weapons are used to truly write the final chapter on the tyranny of nuclear weapons and the first in a vast new volume of lasting prosperity and peace.
Okay, well, we were the three members of the group that went down last March to join with the Quaker NDE weekend. And when we got back, we wrote up a little, each of us wrote a little summary of some of our feelings and experiences that we had had. And we'd like to read that for you. Some of the members of our group aren't here, and so other people will be reading for them. We'll do a little bit of paper shuffling, but I'll read the introduction. We went out to the desert to confront evil. 65 miles outside of Las Vegas is the place where humans have tested more weapons of mass destruction than anywhere else on Earth. The nuclear testing continues in the desert. In 1991, 9 separate tests were conducted at the nuclear test site in Nevada. Only France continued to test weapons elsewhere during 1991. And in April of this year, France announced a moratorium on further testing. Earth's first nuclear test of 1992 took place at the Nevada test site last March, and at least 4 more are planned for later this year. On Friday morning, March 27th, 6 of us left Provo to join an ongoing faith-based witness at the testing, against the testing. For the most part, we were going to take a stand against the policies of George Bush and the U.S. government. The evil we believed we were confronting was a macro-level geopolitical evil that existed mostly at some abstract level in our minds. But over the course of a weekend, we came to understand the evil in a very different way. We saw that each of us were implicated and that it was our personal evil. As we gathered at the edge of the test site with Quakers, Catholics, Jews, and others, we embarked on a powerful journey, and we want to share our experience with you.
Rob Fergus wrote, "As we left Utah, driving south, I let out the yodel from Raising Arizona. I was anxious to get away from Provo, but behind my hooting and hollering, I was nervous about spending a weekend in the desert with the Quakers. We all seemed to be going for different reasons, but we all knew what we were ultimately going to do: witness through faithful and nonviolent protest against the horrors of nuclear weapons testing. What we didn't know was whether we would choose to cross the fence at the nuclear weapons test site and be arrested for civil disobedience. This was a choice we'd struggled with all weekend. As I thought about it, my only desire was that my motives be pure. I didn't want to cross the fence if it was only to be another selfish act on my behalf. I didn't want to be arrested out of any prideful attempt to be cool, spiritual, or even pure. If I was to effectively confront the evils of nuclear testing, I wanted it to be a selfless act, directed by God and not by my own logic or feeling of right and wrong. Then myself, I was both excited and apprehensive as we pulled up to the small Franciscan church in Las Vegas. I had jumped at the opportunity to get out of Provo, but now I was a little nervous about what I had gone and done and why. I would be spending the next couple of nights with a group of unfamiliar Quakers. All kinds of thoughts were racing around in my head. Would we be accepted by the Quakers or seen as intrusive? What would happen when they found out we were Mormon, anthropology, and sociology students? More importantly, I was struggling with how I was going to personally handle the unfamiliar events I knew would transpire in the desert. After the first night of singing and dancing, I knew my apprehension had been for nothing. It was as though the people there did not perceive me as male or female, black or white, young or old, Mormon or Quaker. I was regarded as an equal, or more simply, as a friend. The next few days were filled with informative talks and planning meetings, silent worship meetings, and protest activities. By the time Saturday night rolled around, we all had taken part in developing what would occur the next morning in the desert, and I was a different person. A strong bond of spirituality and a sense of community was formed within me. Something powerful happened while I quietly sat and meditated in the desert. I think it had to do with the contrast that flooded my senses: dry, wet, hot, cold, light, dark, life, death. All became densely concentrated and powerful. I sat in the silence of the desert. My superficial coating became dry and slowly flaked off. This opportunity was both painful and joyous. Painful in that I was stripped down to the raw, undefined, and became subject to the harsh environment with no covering to protect myself. Joyous in that I was able to be seen for what I literally am and could better understand myself and communicate on a new, more spiritually uncontaminated level. I felt closer to God because there was not as many filters for him to pass through before reaching the raw. Denise Peterson wrote, The Quaker worship service at the nuclear test site had just begun. The people I had spent the last 2 days with sat on benches forming a semicircle on the east side of a barbed wire fence. Two of the barbed wires were separated to create a hole that an individual could easily cross. In Quaker style, when a member of the semicircle felt so moved, he, she would say a few words, sing a song, or leave a rock on the rock pile that was the only trace of protesters that had crossed the same fence. The others felt as I did, not just in the group I sat with, but that had made this pilgrimage before me. They all gave me courage. The six of us from Provo sat together on a bench. I did not know if any one of them would cross the small looming fence. I did not know if I would. For a place so filled with destruction, the desert was calm and peaceful. With gentleness, members of the group, united by common goals of peace and hope of a better world, crossed the fence. The circle was completed by members crossing the fence and forming a semicircle on the opposite side of the fence. Ron crossed as though there was a will above his own that drew him across the other side. Rob was the next to cross. With a large rock in his arms, he lumbered to the pile of rocks and dropped it. The rock came crashing down. Rob marched over to the fence and crossed. Larry was the next to cross. With a gentleness and a sense of peace, he calmly walked to the fence and crossed as though he were going home. The clouds seemed to darken and the air was cold. There were three of us on the one side of the fence and three on the other. I did not know if I would cross. I knew it would not matter to anyone else but me. Melanie stood. She spoke of seeing a museum in Nagasaki as a child. She spoke of the horror. She confronted that experience, and with regalty, she walked to the fence and crossed. Greg stood and walked to the fence. He left me alone, but his eyes comforted me. They seemed to say, I know I'm leaving you, but I have to do it, and you have to make your own decision. Confront it. There's a little bit, and I don't have it. Do you have it? I groped for someone or some group to make my decision for me. What would my parents say? What about my bishop? The law said it was wrong, but I knew what I felt, and I responded. I stood up. I stood up as an individual, free to make up my own decision. I was still afraid, but I was filled with peace. In my hand, I carried a small stone. I walked to the pile of rocks and placed my stone on the top. It fell down between the cracks and disappeared. I walked over to the fence. I bent my head down, stooped over, and placed one leg on the other side of the fence. I had crossed the fence. The desert looked the same from the other side of the fence, but I had become a different person.
Okay, this is what I wrote. Earlier that morning, I had felt apprehensive and intimidated at the thought of being arrested. But as we walked hand in hand toward the waiting guards, these feelings were gone. Instead, I felt at peace and in harmony with the land, the Quakers, and with myself. We were arrested and segregated into two holding pens, one for women, the other for men. I found myself in a 60-foot square enclosure containing only rough gravel, an awkward wooden table, and two portable toilets, and about 20 peace-seeking women. One woman was in the far corner singing hymns at the top of her lungs. Several other women were making a giant peace sign in the gravel. The walls were covered with graffiti, peace signs, flowers, and sayings like, Worldwide Sisterhood for Peace, and Arrest Will Never Stop Our Protest. I found Denise and we hugged each other and got a little teary-eyed. Several Quaker women came up to us and hugged us and thanked us for coming to share this experience with them. Then we all joined hands around the giant gravel peace sign and took turns sharing our feelings and telling what we were thankful for. Denise said she was thankful for womanhood. I said I was thankful that my mother had taught me to love peace. The hymn-singing woman sang a hymn. Everyone had something to be thankful for. One by one, we were cited by the police and released. One by one, we left the holding pen and crossed over off of the testing site. As I crossed over onto free land, I was cheered and hugged by many people whom I had just met the day before, but whom I now considered my friends. We were tied together by a solidarity based upon a shared experience of seeking and demanding peace. We had achieved peace and solidarity among ourselves, and as a result, the larger goal of worldwide peace and solidarity seemed firmly within our grasp.
Why did I go? I had been to the desert before, and I knew the power of the journey. One might think that vigiling at the test site would be about playing out some kind of 60s wannabe agenda, or taking a political or intellectual stand against our nation's continued involvement in creating weapons of mass destruction. One might think that we had gone to make a statement of united power against the madness. But in the desert, the journey becomes something different. The witness is quiet, humble, based in faith. It confronts ultimate evil with powerlessness, love, and hope. To be part of that witness is a gift of grace. We find God there. We discover ourselves in ways that seem remarkably familiar. And we experience community as we share the witness with others. This experiment with peacemaking transforms us, and the work of inner healing takes place even as we seek to heal the world. We went to the desert to confront nuclear weapons testing and found our own humanity. We went to confront evil and found a deep spirituality. We thank the friends and others at the Nevada Desert Experience who coordinated our weekend at the test site for warmly inviting us to join with them on the journey. And we invite any of you who are moved by personal conscience to join us at the test site in the continuing vigil for peace.
My name is Diana Lee Hershey, and I'm a member of the Religious Society of Friends. We're sometimes called Quakers. And I've been asked to address you today on the topic, Seeing Mormons at the Test Site, What Their Witness Meant to Me. The desert has always been a holy place where the faithful go for renewal and purification. The delicate landscape, the clear air, the quiet, nourish the soul. For several years, people of faith have gathered in the Nevada desert near the United States nuclear weapons testing facility to bear witness to the idolatry that sacrifices land and people to the gods of power, greed, and domination. These people speak truth to power with love. Their message to the government is simple. Stop nuclear weapons testing. One beautiful desert morning last March, I sat in a Quaker worship service next to the fence surrounding the test site. In the circle with us were six people from Brigham Young University. I was so happy that they had decided to attend the weekend Quaker Witness, and I had begun a friendship with them during our previous time together at St. James Catholic Church in Las Vegas. During the service, individuals would rise to give vocal ministry or bear testimony, and then crawl through the fence to extend our circle to include test site land. Entering the test site meant arrest for trespassing. What a powerful moment it was when the six BYU people, one professor and five students, crossed over that line. I cried openly as Larry, Ron, Melanie, Greg, Rob, and Denise took that risk and gave visible voice to their longings for peace. Few Mormons have witnessed at the test site. Fewer still have been arrested. Later that morning, I joined my new friends for a walk in the desert to visit the Shadow Children. The Shadow Children are two Plaster of Paris statues, one black, the other white, weathering in the Nevada desert. They symbolize the children of the world, charred and vaporized by radiation. We made another circle. We shared, and we cried. Near us in a circle of white rocks was a simple memorial. Underneath the rocks, people have left photographs of friends and relatives who lived downwind and have died from radiation. It is the people of southern Utah, the vast majority of them Mormons, who have paid with their lives for the United States nuclear weapons testing program. Among the residents of St. George, Cedar City, and other small towns in that area, one is hard-pressed to find someone who does not have cancer or who is not related to someone who has had cancer, who has died of cancer. Recent legislation by Congress providing compensation for these deaths and the issuance of an official apology are the final proofs that the cancer deaths in southern Utah are related to nuclear weapons testing. In my experience of Mormons, I have found them cautious and law-abiding, with strong values of integrity, community, solidarity, and commitment to their leaders. I've also found them to be a courageous people with a history of overcoming great odds. But I think it must be especially difficult for Mormons to witness at the test site and to risk arrest when the church leadership has not yet issued a statement regarding the test site. However, I do not believe that nonviolent direct action, which has many facets, including arrest for civil resistance, is alien to the Mormon tradition. I have heard stories of the Mormon resistance to Johnson's army. When the government sent General Johnson and his men to Utah to get the Mormons under control, the response was a dramatic example of nonviolent direct action. The cry went up, "Burn the fields, take to the hills." The people hid their food and burned their crops so Johnson's army would have nothing to eat. Thus, the Mormons resisted the United States military, and they did it nonviolently. In this same creative spirit, Mormons are nonviolently resisting the nuclear arms race. They are becoming a presence at the Nevada test site, witnessing in many ways. Some witness through prayer and fasting, by vigiling at the gates of hell. Others are going a step further and are being arrested in a symbolic statement of their willingness to take personal responsibility for their government's actions. I think the grassroots resistance that is building among Mormons is awesome. Just as Mormons follow their leaders, so do the church leaders respond to the people. During the late 1970s, the United States government developed the Bizarre NX missile scheme, a plan to run missiles around the West Desert of Utah on a railroad track system, a mad kind of science fiction shell game. The pressure brought by individuals and organized groups in a massive grassroots opposition to the NX led to its defeat. On May 5, 1981, the First Presidency delivered a powerful statement against the NX, and plans for its construction were dropped. Prior to the NX statement, the First Presidency delivered two strong anti-nuclear messages, one on Christmas of 1980, the next on Easter of 1981. I am thrilled that the Mormon Peace Gathering is planning a Mormon witness at the test site during Lent next spring. I believe those planning the gathering have a clear mandate from the First Presidency to do so. I congratulate their courage and faith in providing a forum to make the Mormon witness to truth visible to the world.
Well, I'm Larry Young, and it's really good to be here. Last night when I picked Bonnie up at the airport, we had time to talk, and we talked a bit about what motivates us to join in a witness that isn't always an easy thing to do. And both of us talked about the people that we have found in the peacemaking community. One of the things that I want to do is share with you the possibility of a group of individual Mormons moved by conscience joining with other people rooted in faith down at Nevada. And I want to talk about some of the things we might do and some of the directions we're headed in, and invite you to join with us and help facilitate some of that. But you know what we end up doing is we end up going down there, and we join with people like Brian and Bonnie and Diana and Greg and Melanie, and we explore the ultimate questions that are out there in life. And it's a terribly important thing. At times it's a terribly painful thing, but it's also a thing that is so powerful, so moving. It's as we confront the evil. Diana stated a bit more of a mandate from the first presidency than I presume to adopt, but I did want to begin my comments by reiterating some of the most contemporary statements that we can draw upon as Mormons to bring us to this witness. I know as I look out that many of you have been involved in one form or another with these issues over the years, and these words will not be new words. But in the early 1980s, we had a series of first presidency statements that touched directly on the issue. And let me begin by reading excerpts from three first presidency statements. The first was the 1980 Christmas message, which in part stated, "We are dismayed by the growing tensions among the nations and the unrestricted building of the arsenals of war, including huge and threatening nuclear weaponry. We call upon the leaders of nations to sit down and reason together in good faith to resolve their differences. If men of goodwill can bring themselves to do so, they may save the world from a holocaust, the depth and breadth of which can scarcely be imagined. We are confident that when there is enough of a desire for peace and a will to bring it about, it is not beyond the possibility of attainment. And we hope that we're part of that process of generating the desire for peace." From the 1981 Easter message, "We deplore the use of nuclear weapons with their terrible potential for the destruction of life, property, and even of civilization itself." And from the May 1981 statement on the MX system, "We repeat our warnings against the terrifying arms race in which the nations of the earth are presently engaged. We deplore in particular the building of vast arsenals of nuclear weaponry. History indicates that men have seldom created armaments that eventually were not put to use." And so we can draw from our own tradition, the New Testament, the Gospels, but recent first presidency statements to help us find that Mormon voice in the desert. Now, Bonnie mentioned a bit about the current status of legislation, and I know some people have said, well, Larry, what's the need for a continuing witness if we are close to having a one-year moratorium in place? But let me again state that we're in this critical envelope of time. 1995 really is a terribly important date. When the Non-Proliferation Treaty expires, we must have a comprehensive test ban treaty in place, and we need to keep the pressure on. We know that the current administration has threatened vetoes concerning a moratorium. Over the past few weeks, they've worked actively against efforts to put the moratorium in place. And I must tell you that groups like NDE have been very effective and energetic in their lobbying efforts. I've received phone calls from NDE telling me there's going to be a vote within a half an hour. Here's a senator who's a swing vote who might go either way. Give that senator a call within the next 30 minutes. It's the kind of work that NDE is involved with, not just witnessing, but also actively working to bring about a transformation of our policies. Now, I think bringing a Mormon voice to this larger faith-based witness is a terribly important thing that we can do. And let me give a couple of examples. First, the lobbying effort. The fact that we can say there are groups of Mormons moved by personal conscience who believe we need to change our direction empowers people like Mark Hatfield and others in the Senate to say this is a broad-based movement within the United States. There's a broad-based desire to take this opportunity in what we hope is a post-Cold World, Cold War world to make a change. I think our presence can energize Nevada Desert Experience. Their last letter that went out to people and talked about the groups that are involved with Nevada Desert Experience, not only mentioned the Mormons as they listed the specific denominations, but it accidentally mentioned them twice. And I think it did that because they were so surprised and so happy to have that Mormon presence. As I talk with people like Peter Ettinger at Nevada Desert Experience, Pamela Mydell, others, they are so excited about the possibility of a group of Mormons joining with them. I think we also bring something to ourselves. We bring to the Mormon community a glimpse of what that religious-based peace and social justice tradition is all about. And for me, that has been the best part of my personal religious life. And I'm happy to try to share with others who are also moved to that sort of religious manifestation. So those are all good reasons for being there. Let's say a little something about what a weekend at the test site looks like. We've already selected a date during Lent in late March. And it's the last weekend in March. Information is available in a pamphlet that we have available and would like all of you to take. Typical weekend looks something like this. We arrive down in Las Vegas and go to a church, more often than not a Catholic parish, that has been arranged for us. And we join together, we register, and we have dinner. Meals are prepared by workers from the Catholic Workers' House. We have time for singing and sharing and introductions, and we begin the process of building a sense of community among those who are there. Friday evening and Saturday are spent in Las Vegas, and we anticipate a wide variety of activities. The kinds of things we anticipate happening this first year include a presentation by Downwinders and a showing of the film Bound by the Wind. We know that the Mormon community has been particularly hard hit concerning the issue of downwinders. We'll have presentations that focus on finding the Mormon voice at the test site and in peacemaking. What is there about our tradition that calls us at a personal level? We'll have presentations from the Nevada Desert Experience staff dealing with the history of Nevada Desert Experience and other faith-based witnesses at the test site. And you can sense the vitality that comes out of presentations from the NDE people, having listened to Bonnie this morning. We'll get an update on current legislation, an update on current testing. We'll probably do a little letter writing, a little organizing for lobbying. We'll hear comments from representatives from the Western Shoshone Nation, the land on which the test site is situated, and they'll be involved with us. There will be periods of time set aside for silent reflection and meditation, and there will be opportunities for small group reflections and sharing. We'll receive nonviolence training. Part of Saturday afternoon will be spent in that process, and we'll spend some time doing scenario planning for our Sunday morning worship at the test site. And we'll hopefully spend a lot of time in collective singing of pioneer songs and hymns and peace and protest songs. I anticipate that we will have some folk music performers there who will help us out with that. There are a couple of people beginning to think about writing some poetry to share with us while we're at the weekend. So there'll be a wide range of activities. And, of course, we'll spend time in personal and collective prayer. Sunday morning, we'll take the gathering to the edge of a test site, about an hour outside of Las Vegas, and we'll engage in collective worship. That collective worship will culminate in some members of the group carrying the worship service onto the test site. Worshiping at the test site will be, I'm certain, because of my experience, is a powerful experience. Every time I've taken a group of Mormons to join with NDE, every time it has been such a powerful moment for them. All of our actions at the test site will take place within the context of adherence to a nonviolent covenant. We'll adopt the Nevada Desert Experiences Covenant of Nonviolence. fairly traditional covenant of nonviolence, but it includes things such as, let me read a couple of examples. We will refrain from swearing and insults. We will protect opponents from insults or attacks. If arrested, we will not resist. If arrested, we will behave in an exemplary manner. We will not evade the legal consequences of our action. Typically, there's already been some hugging done with the sheriff. There's a close relationship with the sheriff. I know of no other group that the sheriff's department refuses to handcuff. But their trust and sensitivity to the faith-based witness has transformed the way they treat people who participate in the Nevada desert experience. At the test site, our focus will be on finding the Mormon voice, but we'll be joined by Catholics, by Lutherans, by Mennonites, by friends, by others during that weekend. And so while we will be joining by bringing a Mormon weekend to the larger series of weekends that take place during Lent, there will also be an ecumenical sense to our gathering. We are also planning to provide some special activities for children. Mormons have a lot of kids, and some of us can't participate if we don't somehow figure out how to take care of the kids while we're on this retreat. So let me read just two paragraphs from the pamphlet that deals with the children's program that we are now in the early stages of planning and organizing. We are excited about plans for Peace Primary to be held in Las Vegas in conjunction with the NDE Mormon Weekend. Children ages 4 to 12 will explore the meaning of peace and peacemaking through age-appropriate games, activities, stories, and crafts. The program, building on the Book of Mormon account of the anti-Nephi Lehi's repudiation of bloodshed, will culminate in a symbolic burying of war toys expressing the children's commitment to renounce war and proclaim peace. Teenagers are welcome to participate with their parents at the NDE Mormon weekend. We want them there. However, it's very important to recognize that minors are discouraged from participating in the optional civil disobedience action, given that the authorities treat that situation very, very differently. They pursue legal action against the parents, and there can be concern about serious action being taken. But there is a place for them at the test site. Now, finally, let me conclude by saying something about what you can do. And we really want to invite you to join with us if this sounds like something that would be good for you to join in. At this point, there are about 15 of us engaged in the early organizing. Most of us are people who have had experience at the test site, and we're doing some initial organizing and planning, building towards the March activity. We have some literature available today that describes both what we're up to and gives a bit more detail about what Nevada Desert Experience is about, and we'd like you to pick that up. Today at 1:15 and also tomorrow at 1:15, we'll be showing Bound by the Wind, which discusses the downwinders. It also discusses the rationale for pursuing a comprehensive test ban treaty, and concludes by giving a brief summary of what it's like to be at Nevada Desert Experience for a weekend with some footage of NDE groups. We're also sponsoring another session today at 2:15, a one-hour session that will explore in more detail the theological and ethical roots for Christians in confronting the issue of peacemaking. We have sign-up sheets for those who are interested in more information, and we will tell you when our next organizing meeting is. If that's heavier than you want to be involved with, but you want to be informed about the gathering as it gets closer, get your name on that sign-up sheet, and we'll keep in touch. We're also planning, because we need to relax and have some fun, we're planning on a picnic Friday, August 28th, to informally get together and have a relaxed evening up in City Creek Canyon. And any of you that are within driving distance are welcome to join with us. We have a flyer that gives a little bit of detail about that. And then, as I said, any of you who would like to join with us in the organizing, we're a pretty open group. We do all of our planning through consensus decision-making, so we're a pretty inefficient group also. But that's an important part of the process. But again, most importantly, what we need is your help with networking and recruiting. We see ourselves probably in December, January, and February trying to set up a series of cottage meetings where one or two of us will come to you in your homes. You invite a couple of your friends. This will sound very Mormon to you. Invite a couple of your friends. And we'd like to have a relaxed evening sharing our experiences and inviting you to join with us and reassuring you that pretty normal people are involved in this and that it's a pretty powerful journey that we're inviting you to share in with us. And finally, let me conclude by, and Brian's wondering when I am going to conclude, let me conclude by saying something about what we hope to accomplish. And let me draw that also from our pamphlet, because this then becomes a collective statement for those of us that have been involved in the organizing. Our objective is to bring about an end to nuclear weapons testing at the Nevada test site as a first step towards negotiation of a comprehensive test ban treaty. We are inspired by the efforts of many people throughout the world who, recognizing the presence of evil and injustice around them, have heeded the spiritual prompting to be anxiously engaged in a good cause and to do many things of their own free will and bring to pass much righteousness. That's from Doctrine and Covenants, Section 58. Adding our voices to the thousands of others calling for an end to nuclear testing, we can make a difference. And there is more. In our own lives, we are grateful for the testimony of God's love we have experienced in feeling called to bear personal witness against preparations for nuclear war. We feel an obligation to talk and reflect together on the significance of what we have experienced personally. On the one hand, horror at our nation's continued preparations for a Holocaust, the depth and breadth of which can scarcely be imagined. On the other, a celebration of God's love, plainly manifest in the spiritual promptings we feel, and in the natural and human creation we are called to preserve and protect. The NDE Mormon Weekend will provide us with an opportunity to lift and strengthen one another in an expression of faith that integrates Mormon identity with peacemaking. Like our pioneer forebears, our faith in God challenges us to embark together upon a spiritual journey into the desert.
By my watch, we have at least 25 minutes left, and we'd like to field any questions from the audience, and please address them to either the panelists or myself, and we will try to answer them as best we can. Are there any questions?
I'm really not involved with the organizers of WSNT, but I am a member of it. And what we do is once a month we receive a little card from them and giving us the name, the senator, or you know, president. We've written to Gorbachev, all the people in the world, and expressed our support for a moratorium on ending nuclear testing, and. And then we put a little bit of our personal reasons. And I always put as my personal reason that I feel responsible to my Heavenly Father. I always get emotional. to protect this wonderful earth that He has provided for us. And every time I hear of a nuclear test, I think, oh, God, what are we doing? You know, And I can't believe that educated people, human beings, can even, sit at home and continue doing what they're doing and not do something about it. And that's been the only way that I felt that I could raise my voice. And because Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we saw the visible evidence of an extent of what could happen. And if this is being done, so much more, you know, the bombs that they're testing are so much more powerful than they were. Just imagine the extent of damage within the core of the earth. And I've also noticed, and I don't know if anybody else has noticed, or whether it's wishful thinking on my part, or just to confirm my deep concern, is that there's always an earthquake somewhere in the world when there's a nuclear test. And I think also they've shoved another little, you know, plate out of whack. And when I drove from San Francisco, you know, from Salt Lake to San Francisco and back, as I was traveling through the desert, I thought, you know, I could really, you know, be part of an explosion. That, you know, my car could suddenly spurt up, you know. And whether that's ignorance or whether that could happen or not, but I do think that it is frightening and awesome that we are contributing by not doing anything to this continuing. And so I would encourage Larry and all of you, whether you're Mormon, whatever you are, black, white, green, pink, to join WSNT, because writing is like, in the scriptures, the importunate widow who kept appealing to a judge, and he didn't take any notice, and then eventually he says, oh, I've got to get her out of my hair, let's do what she wants. And so I do want to join this organization. I do want to go on that. And I'm so happy to know today that the general authorities have done something I approve of. By kind of, putting their stamp of authority and permission. And I was also very pleased, Larry, that you said, you know, this was going to be a Mormon group. I was glad you included these other wonderful people. Wonderful people. I love Quakers. I love everybody. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Can I just, for people who might not know, WSAT stands for Writing to Stop Nuclear Testing.
Yeah, I was going to put that. Okay. Yeah, WSNT stands for Writing to Stop Nuclear Testing. It's a local group here organized in Salt Lake City and in Utah. For a couple of years, at least, that I'm aware of. Yeah. Are there any other questions? No? I don't own a car personally, so. Ahimsa. It's a Sanskrit term for. Yeah. Okay, is there another question over here? For a long time, because of the, in essence, the large numbers of people being arrested at mass actions, the district attorney of Nye County has had a policy of non-prosecution, such that the net effect is that you get arrested and cited, but generally charges are dropped, that they don't go through the procedure of actually holding trials in the town of Beatty or anywhere else in Nye County. Much of that is to do with the fact that they are a small county, they have a small population, they don't have a very large tax base, so as a consequence, they don't have the resources to handle thousands of cases on a regular annual basis. And you have to realize that there are other groups besides NDE. For example, there's American Peace Test, and there are other groups that have actions where they bring in several thousands of people who cross over the line or who try to get into Mercury. And there's even groups now who are focusing their efforts on getting to ground zero to actually delay tests. So in what we expect to happen at the Mormon weekend would be that we would be cited, but that there would be no real legal ramifications that would come from that. Yeah, that policy could change. The district attorney office is an elected official office, and so it is up to the politics of Nye County as to what the current policy is, and that could easily change. Go ahead.
I
about Larry said consensus decision making is inefficient, and I want to make a pitch for that form of decision making, because I believe that underlying war and underlying nuclear weapons testing and development is a way of making decisions that is fundamentally counter to human welfare. That we make decisions in a hierarchy, we make decisions in a way that does not give each of us a voice in the decisions that affect our lives. And even though it does take a bit of learning and patience, in the long run, consensus decision making, which is different from voting because we don't do anything till we all agree to do it, is totally more efficient. And I belong to another organization that is very political and works a lot in getting women elected to office. And at one of our recent meetings, we took a vote and we agreed to do something. Now, since that meeting, the people who disagreed with the vote have been upset, and they have been, you know, grumbling around, and in some ways all hell has broken loose. And I've been reflecting all week, and I keep nudging the other people in the group, and I keep saying, you know, if we did this by consensus, this could never have happened, because we wouldn't have done it till we all agreed. And so in the long run, even though it may take a little bit longer, it increases your strength so much, because you're solid and you're all together. So that's my little pitch.
Yes.
I think one attitude that helps with consensus decision making is the attitude that if everyone can't agree on it, then maybe you don't need to act. Maybe it doesn't need to be done. Then you shouldn't need to wait.
I like to do that surrounding the issue of when I need to mow my lawn.
Yes. Well, I can answer a little bit of that. Currently, the Department of Energy is trying to restructure its weapons facilities in a comprehensive program that sort of has as a mind to deal with environmental issues, because several of the DOE facilities do not currently meet the current environmental impact or Environmental Protection Agency standards. So places, for example, Rocky Flats and Savannah River and Hanford and the Mound and Fernald are not really actively producing components for nuclear weapons, because they're spending much of their time on cleanup and on mitigation and remediation efforts to take care of nuclear waste and radioactive isotopes that have gotten into the environment over the last 50 years or so. The only thing that I've seen official that's come out by DOE concerning the test site is that there is an intent to clean up the test site if a moratorium comes through, but of course they don't really want to do that, so they're really kind of opposed to stopping testing to begin with. My suspicion is that there would be there's enough there to clean up that they could keep all 8,000 people employed in different tasks, but I don't know that anything's really been planned either by E.G. Reynolds Company, which has the contract for managing the place, or any of the other firms that are involved there. That would be something that would be set by essentially by DOE policy or by the Department of Energy officials themselves as to what they want to do, and then that would infer new contracts for management for cleanup and so forth. Now, they are still trying to get looking at using Yucca Flats as a high-level radioactive waste site, but they're running into problems there with the environmental impact statement. They're also trying to get one possible use for the test site is for the Space Nuclear Propulsion Test Facility, which is to design a nuclear-powered rocket engine One of the places that the Air Force is looking into is plate development at the test site as well. Are there any other questions? If not, I'd like to remind you that during the lunch break, which we will be adjourning to shortly, we will be showing Bound by the Wind in the Weights and Measure Room, which is just immediately to the next door. And that after that video, in the next hour following lunch, the Mormon Peace Gathering is also sponsoring a session on Christians and nuclear weapons, which will be the wrap-up of our presentation here at the Sandstone Symposium this year.
What?
No, that'll be next. That will also be in Weights and Measures as well.
So
thank you very much for attending.